From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
As mail-in ballots return to elections offices, data shows more Democrats have voted so far than Republicans. But experts don't expect that lead to last.
We have seen more and more, not just in Florida, but in many states, Republicans just have shied away from vote by mail compared to Democrats.
Also this week, the race for a North Florida state Senate seat is heating up.
Republicans flipped it. They want to keep it. Democrats lost it. They want to get it back to show that their party is starting to gain back some traction that they lost over the last 3 or 4 years.
And we'll hear about how to fight disinformation and misinformation during disasters and their recovery.
Every Floridian knows about the water and you need the batteries and you need the flashlight and you need this, that, and the other. What we don't talk about is packing an information kit.
I'm Regan McCarthy. This is Capitol Report. Florida Democrats are leading in returned vote-by-mail ballots by about 60,000 so far. But political watchers say that isn't surprising, and the lead isn't likely to last. Tristan Wood has more.
Over 422,000 vote-by-mail ballots have been returned by Democrats. 362,000 Republican ballots have been returned. But that doesn't mean Democrats have an advantage in the race. Republicans have a significant voter registration lead. They also have historically been more likely to show up on Election Day. University of Central Florida political science professor Aubrey Jewett says that's been especially true since former President Donald Trump's first election.
When President Trump began to question vote by mail and suggest that it was open to fraud, and he began to really suggest that Republican backers and his MAGA supporters just vote on Election Day, a lot of them followed his advice. And so we have seen more and more, not just in Florida, but in many states, Republicans just have shied away from vote by mail compared to Democrats.
Jewett points out that in most pre-election polling, top-of-the-ticket Republicans in Florida are leading.
What exactly that lead is, you know, is depends on the poll, but on average, President Trump has been up maybe 6 points or something like that in Florida, whereas Rick Scott maybe has been up by just a little bit less on average, maybe about 5 points, something like that.
And the Democrats' vote-by-mail lead isn't as large as it was in 2020. Republican Party of Florida Chair Evan Powers says that's a good sign for his party.
More optimistic that we're going to turn out more voters than they do. We have the resources to do it. We've out-registered, out-raised, and outworked them. And they just don't have the money to turn out the voters that they need to turn out to compete against us.
Barry University political science professor Sean Foreman thinks it's too early to read too much into the vote-by-mail totals, but says it should have Democrats worried.
Looking at the numbers, these are not good signs for Democrats in Florida. And it also goes along with the polls that show that Republicans have a pretty comfortable lead in the presidential and Senate race in our state.
But Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried says Democratic voter turnout is exactly where they want it. She says the gap being smaller is due to the COVID-19 pandemic occurring during the 2020 elections, where more people voted by mail. She expects her party to perform better at in-person voting this time around.
Surrogates are coming, the voters are voting, the energy is high, and Democrats are more organized and more determined than they have ever been, and that is going to show up on the day of election when all the votes are tallied.
Early voting in some Florida counties starts Monday. Election Day is November 5th. I'm Tristan Wood.
The race for Florida Senate District 3 is heating up. The campaigns for Republican incumbent Corey Simon and Democratic challenger Daryl Parks have both spent millions of dollars fighting for a seat at the legislative table. Adrian Andrews spoke with voters and a political expert to find out what makes this race so important.
A lot is riding on this year's election cycle as voters across the state prepare to send in their early voting ballots. Tallahassee's Urban League hosted a voter outreach party for residents in the Big Bend. Leon County's Director of Civic Engagement, Jaja Ingram Fitzpatrick, says it gave residents a chance to meet their candidates ahead of the election.
We need to find out what's important to them, and we need to make sure that they are an active part of our community. So that's why events like this is so very important.
In November, Simon, the former Florida State Seminole and NFL star, will go head-to-head against civil rights attorney Parks in a District 3 showdown that experts say is a flippable seat.
Republicans flipped it. They want to keep it. Democrats lost it. They want to get it back to show that their party is starting to gain back some traction that they lost over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Susan McManus got her PhD in political science from Florida State University and was a professor at the University of South Florida. She also co-wrote a book on the history of Florida politics. She says District 3, which covers the entire Big Bend, has been Democrats' pride and joy for more than 100 years. It wasn't until 2022 when Simon defeated State Senator Lorraine Osley, Republicans reclaimed the district.
Democrats overall are really trying very hard to pick up some additional seats in both the House and the Senate because they don't have enough seats right now to even stop any kind of procedural thing that comes before either the House or the Senate.
Parks and Simon recently debated in Tallahassee, touching on issues affecting the state. Both candidates made comments about the state's current 6-week abortion ban, a law that Senator Simon says he voted against in the Florida legislature.
When 15 weeks was on the table, and I said 15 was about where I'm at, 6 was too far. That was my vote.
Park says he supports abortion access and has previously accused Simon of supporting abortion bans. Parks also blamed Simon for the rising cost of home and car insurance in Florida.
I'm here running because I think that you all are paying too much for your auto and your home insurance, and I'm going to fight for that. It'll be my number one priority to lower your insurance bill.
Simon pushed back on Parks' claims, saying he championed past legislation that brought more resources to fiscally constrained counties in the state.
There's a reason why we've seen more money come into this district over the last 2 years than we have in the last 2 decades. It's making sure that I'm hearing from these families.
Even if Parks overthrows Simon, the Democratic Party will still be outnumbered in the state's 40-member Senate. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Remember the shark swimming down the street after Hurricane Ian? It didn't happen. But fake memes and dangerous rumors continue to swirl on social media as Florida grapples with the 1-2 punch of Hurricanes Helene and Milton. And as voting in the presidential election is already underway. Janet Coates, the managing director for the Consortium on Trust in Media and Technology at the University of Florida's College of Journalism and Communications, spoke about the issue on the most recent episode of the Deeper Dive with Dara Kam podcast from the News Service of Florida. Here's an excerpt.
Misinformation and disinformation. I had Katie Sanders on from PolitiFact, and she was talking about, you know, election fact-checking, campaign fact-checking. And so you've got that layered on top of the storm response. And I mean, wow, the stuff that we're seeing is the FEMA example was just kind of the tip of the iceberg and most obvious. I'm curious if there is a way to tamp that down.
Yeah, and that's one of those questions that you wish there was, you know, a recipe from which to bake this cake and have it be all beautiful and tasty and perfect.
Like when you have a kid, you want that.
Yes.
They don't come with that.
No, they do not. And just there's so much noise in the information environment just on a regular day. And in these days, you know, we're less than a month out from a critical election. They're all important, but I think we all know that this is an incredibly high stakes election up and down the ticket across the nation. And then we have the entire Southeast basically not just dealing with the impact of this storm, but with this heightened emotional state that we're all in, whether you're, you know, on the coast in Tampa or in Gainesville, where I am, you're still the anxiety piece of this. And when we are in a heightened emotional state, this is the thing that I think the research shows that I keep coming back to, is that disinformation and misinformation, let's just call it disinformation is built to appeal to our most visceral emotions. Mm. And everybody's already raw. We were already raw around the political divides in this country, the disinformation that is just, you know, rampant through communication about our politics and about elections, and add a layer onto that in places like Florida and North Carolina, where now we're raw at the level of my neighborhood is at risk of not being here anymore.
Or it isn't here. Yeah.
That is that perfect storm of, you know, emotional dysregulation. Mm. There's just too much coming at us. You know, I was talking to a television reporter from Jacksonville about this topic this morning, and I can't take credit for this. I read it in a piece in The Atlantic about disinformation mm-hmm. around storms. And, you know, we spend time talking about packing a hurricane kit. You know, every Floridian knows about the water, and you need the batteries, and you need the flashlight, and you need this, that, and the other. You know, what we don't talk about is packing an information kit around disaster or around elections or around whatever are the vital, important issue that we're dealing with. If I'm in a hurricane situation, I want to know, I want to have thought about, where do I get accurate information? There's a reason why those meteorologists in the Tampa market are beloved. I mean, worshipped like celebrities, and that's because they built that trusted relationship of, I'm here for you, I'm going to provide you with information, I'm going to tell you what I know, I'm going to tell you what I don't know, and I live here. I'm worried about the same things. I'm worried my house may wash away. I'm worried about my family. I'm worried about my pets. That's the piece. As local news has flown apart, that's what we've lost.
That was Janet Coates, Managing Director for the Consortium on Trust in Media and Technology at the University of Florida's College of Journalism and Communications, on the Deeper Dive with Dara Kam podcast, a product of the News Service of Florida. Hear the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell has confirmed an incident of verbal harassment of a FEMA worker in Florida since Hurricane Milton. Her comments come after a Tennessee sheriff says witnesses saw an armed group harassing FEMA workers in that state. Criswell says misinformation on social media about the federal organization is causing some people to harass and threaten FEMA workers in the field.
We are working with local law enforcement to provide the safest environment and harassment-free environment for our staff. And so it's not just potential threats, but it's just harassment as well.
Criswell says although these incidents are disturbing, she doesn't think the data necessarily shows they're part of a wider trend.
And so I don't know if I have data that say it's increased, but I know that we are much more focused on it just because of the amount of misinformation that was out there.
Officials say it's important to let FEMA workers do their job to aid in the recovery process. Still to come on Capitol Report, as Floridians recover from three different hurricanes, questions about insurance are growing.
You know, we're like the little people around. We don't have that kind of money to have homeowner insurance. It is outrageous.
One line worker shares what keeps her going as she works to get the lights back on in her community.
These people that I see in the grocery store, these people that I run into at the gas station, I get to help those people.
And a group of seniors gathers to reflect on their experiences following the recent hurricanes.
We're alive. We're here.
Pulling up in a church is good stuff. You know, everyone's saying a little prayer. And
after a triple hit to the state from Hurricanes Debbie, Helene, and Milton, Floridians are working to recover. But for many, that's brought up questions about property insurance, ranging from how do they get their claims paid to what do they do if they don't have it. Margie Menzel reports.
Shonda Palmer lives in Perry, Florida. Last year, the town not only got slammed by Hurricane Idalia, but its mill, the main source of livelihood there, closed down. This year, Hurricanes Debbie and then Helene hit the area. Palmer doesn't have property insurance, which she says is too expensive for many of the people who live there.
Nobody does in Perry because, like I say, the main sources of money there is closed down. And like all of us little people, you know, we're like the little people around. We don't have that kind of money to have homeowner insurance. It is outrageous.
Palmer is talking on the phone while driving home to Perry after Hurricane Helene. She says she got her home through her family.
Mine was handed down. That's how I have one, and that's how most people that have one is. They were handed down or, you know, owned by their families and stuff for years, and they growed up in them and stuff like that.
Experts say a larger number of uninsured homes in rural areas like Perry often means a slower recovery time following storms. But Palmer is confident the community can do it.
Everybody loves Perry that's from there. I was born there, raised there. Everybody's going to, they'll all get together. Everybody will pull together and rebuild everything that's needed to be done. It don't matter. They can target it however long, and everybody's always going to rebuild. They're not going anywhere.
Even for those with insurance, recovery is still a long way off. As of Thursday, the State Office of Insurance Regulation was reporting insurance claims for Milton nearing $200,000 and $2.3 billion in estimated insured losses. For Helene, the losses are estimated at $1.3 billion. And for Hurricane Debbie, it's $131 million. State insurance officials have issued orders to protect policyholders impacted by Hurricanes Helene and Milton. They apply to all insurers in the state and policyholders in most counties. The order extends grace periods for any policy, provision, notice, correspondence, or law that imposes a time limit. And it prohibits the cancellation or non-renewal of a policy in an impacted area, except at the written request of the policyholder. Meanwhile, the state's so-called insurer of last resort, Citizens Property Insurance, says it remains in good shape.
You know, we are here for our policyholders. We're in strong financial shape, and we will be there when they need us.
That's Michael Peltier, a spokesperson with Citizens Property Insurance. The company currently has more than 1.2 million policyholders, but Peltier says Citizens has the financial resources on hand to handle claims, including Milton. The state-backed Citizens was set up in a way that will always work, because the insurer can put an extra charge on the insurance policies of most Floridians to help it cover its costs.
If we exhaust our reserves, our reinsurance coverage, and other protections, the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund, for example, we are required to levy surcharges on our policyholders first. And if there's still a deficit, then we are required to levy assessments on all Florida insurance consumers, or most of them anyway, auto, boat, property owners.
Peltier says that while Citizens will always be able to pay claims, the larger it gets, the more it will run the risk of having to levy assessments on not only its own policyholders, but on Florida insurance consumers who aren't even Citizens policyholders.
Our Board of Governors, our CEO, the governor, and other folks are trying to do what we can to minimize the risk that we would have to do that.
Citizens Property Insurance is working to reduce the number of people who depend on the state-backed insurance. Governor Ron DeSantis and the legislature have made efforts to stabilize Florida's insurance market, in part by reducing the ability to sue for claims. But it's unclear whether those changes are having an impact. I'm Margie Menzel.
Are you filing a claim for storm damage? Speaking on the Florida Roundup, State Insurance Commissioner Michael Jaworski said there are ways you can avoid unnecessary costs while reporting damages from multiple storms.
You had damage from Helene, and then you subsequently had damage from Milton. Please make sure that you note that and document that to your insurer so that they know they are required to count that cumulatively so you're not paying your deductible twice for damage.
Homeowners should document each storm and file claims separately for each event to ensure all damages are properly covered. The same goes if you suffered damage from Hurricane Debbie back in August. Meanwhile, Governor Ron DeSantis has issued an order allowing voting-related changes in counties hammered by Hurricane Milton. It's the second time in less than a month flexibility has been given to supervisors of elections based on catastrophic storm damage. DeSantis's executive order allows supervisors of elections in Milton-affected counties to make changes such as consolidating polling sites and making it easier for displaced voters to obtain mail-in ballots.
Allowing the supervisors of elections to make modest but reasonable accommodations if they have had damage to any of their voting sites because of the storm, and to be able to ensure that folks have an ability and a place to be able to cast their ballot.
DeSantis issued the order less than 3 weeks before the November 5th elections and as early voting sites prepare to open Monday in many counties. After Hurricanes Helene and Milton, you've probably been seeing bucket trucks all across the region, with line workers on electrical poles restoring power to thousands of homes and businesses. Susie Mackey is what's called a trouble man for Duke Energy. She's the first one on the scene to determine what the problem is before calling in the linemen. She's been volunteering to work 16-hour overnight shifts since just before Helene swept through, with only one day off to prep her home for Milton. She's been in the male-dominated industry for years, three of them in Florida. WUSF's Jessica Mazzaros spoke to Mackey about the aftermath of these back-to-back storms. They're speaking at Duke's property in Largo.
What are the most common issues that you're having to deal with now after these storms, after Milton? Like, what are the things that you're having to address the most?
With Helene, it was more flooding issues. We did have some wind damage, but with Milton, it's a ton of wind damage, and it's trampolines blown into the power lines. It's trees down everywhere that have taken down whole pole lines. I mean, it's easy to fix one pole, but it's a whole lot harder to fix 20 poles. And we've had areas where we've had multiple poles in a row that have been down. So the wind damage with Milton has really been the biggest challenge.
Do you think it's the most challenging scenario that you've worked so far?
For me, it's been probably one of the most challenging scenarios as far as we kind of feel like we're getting our butts kicked. It's been we were just catching our breath from Helene, just starting to get cleaned up, thinking that there was an end in sight, and then to get beaten over the head with Milton, it's been a little disheartening. And I moved to Florida because I love the beaches here, so it was super emotional for me to go down to the beaches and see the destruction, and then to turn around and have that switch over to neighborhoods that I service and total destruction. I mean, roofs ripped off of trailers and fences down everywhere, trees on top of houses. That's been a little tough emotionally.
What area do you service, and do you live in that same area that you service?
I do actually live in the area that I service. So I work out of our Walsingham yard here, which we service most of the beach area from just north of St. Pete Beach to just south of Clearwater Beach. And then we service a big swath through the middle of Pinellas County all the way out to the airport and 275. So we have a big chunk of the area and a lot of customers. And I actually do live in my area. So it's kind of cool that when I say that I'm getting the power on for my neighbors, like literally I see these people in the stores. Some of them recognize me, and but I really do feel a sense of community here.
You volunteer for these 16-hour shifts, the night shifts, so there has to be something that's motivating you to do this.
So everybody always thinks it's really hokey, but I actually do my job because I love helping my community. One of the big reasons I got into line work was that I wanted a job where I could feel like I was giving back to my community. When I had an opportunity to become a lineman, I realized how much people depend on us, and so that's actually the biggest reason that I do it is for my customers. I mean, we all do it for a paycheck, but at least my big benefit is to getting to help my community, getting to help my customers, these people that I see in the grocery store, these people that I run into at the gas station. I get to help those people.
That was WUSF's Jessica Mazzaros talking with Duke Energy's Susie Mackey. You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Regan McCarthy. Finally this week, about 100 residents of a Manatee County senior living community gathered at a potluck chicken dinner. While some of their homes were hit by either Hurricanes Helene or Milton, or both, the group met to reconnect and welcome back Snowbird residents who returned to survey the damage. WUSF's Octavio Jones joined them.
We came from Connecticut. My wife had planned this trip probably 6 months ago to come down and see my mother.
Because we haven't been down since 2020, right before the pandemic.
And when Helene hit, Mom had her lanai ripped off, the carport ripped off, thrown over the house. She had a new roof, so that was intact. Did a little repairs for her on that because it had a couple tears. And she said to us probably on Saturday or Sunday, storm's coming, do you want to leave? You want to get out before the storm comes? And I asked my wife, and she said, absolutely not. We're not leaving your 82-year-old mother and your 84-year-old aunt. And then she said, do you want to get out Tuesday morning? You could probably still go. And she said no. And by the time we even thought about it again, they said the airports are shut down. Both Sarasota, Tampa, St. Pete, they were all shut. So we said, we're going to ride it out. Not in the home, but we went to the church across the street on 41, the Methodist Church. They opened up the church to all the members, and because my mom's a member, we went with them, and we brought air mattresses, we brought food and water and dominoes, a lot of dominoes and cards being played, and we rode it out, and you know.
We're still standing, still standing.
My aunt's whole roof was torn off, brand new roof, metal over, asphalt roof. It tore right off, ended up over on close to the railroad tracks behind here.
And but moral of the story, we survived, we're alive, we're here.
Pulling up in a church is good stuff. You know, everyone's saying a little prayer and getting it, you know, having a little reality check. And we're just glad to have been here for Mom. And I wouldn't have changed it. You know, this is, I told someone the other day, I said, this is the most harrowing vacation I've ever had. And
but
it's the longest vacation I've ever had. I never took vacation for 2 weeks. 1 week turned into two. And this last few days, once we got power back and got the internet back and back to some normality, we started getting fuel in the car again, and you know, we helped a lot of neighbors. The day after the storm, first thing we were all doing is just going checking on each other. And
most helpful vacation ever.
You know, even though it was stressful, I think the mindset of seeing the camaraderie, it's just an experience that I could go home and remember.
I don't want to leave.
She wants to
move to Florida. There's so much more to help.
Yeah, there's so much more to do. My brother's coming down Saturday. His flight got all messed up.
Yeah,
we're he's on his way down.
Trying to pay it forward, you know, the next brother and then the next brother.
So last night we emptied Mom's whole freezer, said all the shrimp, all the fish, all the chicken you bought. Washed it, went to the store today and filled it back up and told her, you're in good hands now, and Dave's coming down to take second shift. And we'll be back in February. Yeah, we filled her car up with gas today.
Because we couldn't do that for days.
Good stuff.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Seeing the dinners like this, you know, the first night we came, they had hot dogs and hamburgers. And my wife said, we got to bring something.
Oh, you can't went through Mom's freezer,
found some corn. She had cheddar cheese. We got some onion. She makes this salad.
Salad.
It went like crazy.
Mac and cheese.
We come down the other
day. Mac.
And she makes a 2-pound tuna mac salad. And everyone's like, you didn't have to bring anything. So, well, we're going to eat your food. We're bringing something. That's, you know, the whole...
That's what you do. It's a community.
If you have it, you give it. And that's our story, and we're sticking to it.
That's right.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Tristan Wood, Margie Menzel, and Lynn Hatter. Thanks also to Jessica Mazzaros, Dara Cam, and Octavio Jones. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Regan McCarthy. Join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.